You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, February 15th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, hot off the presses, just had a debate with Peter Schiff, the libertarian. He's got a radio show. I think it's called The Peter Schiff Show. That and forced baptism for Holocaust survivors. It's the latest craze, apparently. Or it's not the latest craze, but it's still an ongoing craze. More push by the corporate prison industry to take over more of our prisons. But they're willing to make a deal. They'll rent these prisons on the cheap if we promise to keep them at 90% capacity. Oh, God. Anonymous. Still going at it. And we've got some other... I don't know. I've got a bunch of stories today and some listener emails. Let's start here, shall we? I think we're going to be talking to Jeff Smith today. I'm not 100% sure. We're trying to get him. If we don't get him today, we'll get him tomorrow. There's been, more pieces out with Chris Edges. But I want to address this because I'm feeling a little juiced. I literally just finished... 20 minutes on the radio with Peter Schiff, and we're going to play that for you shortly, because it was an interesting debate about the, it was a fun debate. Maybe you won't find it interesting. I think you will, on this contraception mandate. And, you know, look, I want to make this absolutely clear. I have a real problem with a guy like Rick Santorum, who's more and more looking like he's going to be the Republican nominee. And he's one of these movement conservative guys who is probably the most anti-libertarian of the Republicans in the field. And I find, I'm sure he must have a policy that I don't find repugnant. But I just off the top of my head, I don't know what it is. Every policy that I'm aware of that he's at least promoted, I find repugnant. My problem with libertarians is a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more subtle. And that is that their libertarian worldview is built upon some type of fantasy of the existence of a market in nature. And because they are built, because their philosophy is built upon that fantasy, invariably, the results of their philosophy, if they were imposed, would essentially just lead to a sort of a mutated feudalism, where those who have the most benefit to begin with, the system is essentially that they would design, would essentially provide for that. They also are in complete denial about this notion of free marketism. And then, you know, as you start to move into like sort of the less thoughtful libertarians. They just get caught up in jingoism about liberty and freedom, and they without any sense of what those words mean, or making up what those words mean, or just, I mean, you might as well just say, like, mauve. You know, you might as well just say the name of a color. It's silliness. And we'll get into this, but I want to invite any libertarians to call into this program, as I do every day, at 646-257-3920. We generally get the calls about 10 past the noon hour Eastern. So call in. We have minimal screening, if at all. And you can say whatever you want. Because, you know, we put a lot of videos on YouTubes, and we get a lot of libertarians say, you never, blah, 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 blah. It's just ridiculous. So call in. I get particularly annoyed when people just keep tweeting at me the same thing. You can actually call in and have a conversation with me. So at some point, I just block them if they won't stop.
It's hard to have a debate over 140 characters.
Well, because these people know they can't defend their position, and all they have is a slogan, all they have is a bumper sticker, and they just keep tweeting it at me.
Oh, that's why Twitter is perfect for them, because it's 140 characters.
And look, I love Twitter, and, you know, I like to go at it with Breitbart until apparently the guy still tweets at me without realizing he's blocked me. I can't see anything he tweets at me. And so I get emails like, hey, why aren't you answering Breitbart? Well, because I can't see that he's tweeted me.
I think if you just log out of your username, you could see those.
Yeah, but I'm not going to log out of my username to look and see what he's, you know, over the course of the day, I don't think like, hey, I wonder if Breitbart's tweeted about me. It's not until somebody emails me or tweets me that I even realize it. That dude's gone completely off the rails. So we'll get to this Peter Schiff thing in just a moment. But there's a couple of stories that I want to hit first. This one is just poor Mitt Romney. This dude just cannot catch a break. Now, look, I don't have any problem with Mormonism because it, you know, whatever, magic underwear. I don't even know that much about it, or you know. I don't know that Mormonism is any more or less crazy than any other religion. But I do find it sort of offensive that at one point in the history of Mormonism, they decided it was going to be policy for them to baptize dead people.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Well, I think I heard about it, but, you know, I don't even think about it. They convert people they think should be Mormons or had some, they feel they have some claim to them after they die. Now, again, listen, I'm dead. There's very little you can do to me that I think is going to bother me at that point. I mean, you know, maybe I think it's quite possible I've been so scarred by my daughter that if you were to play Justin Bieber songs in my coffin over and over again, I might come back from the dead and have a problem with that. But short of that, you know, baptize me, circumcise me again, it doesn't matter. I'm dead. But I can see how it would be of offense to certain people. And I think I probably would be more offended if someone did it to a family member than to myself. Because if I was aware of that, I'd be alive. And that's where things really bother you more. My sense is that when you're dead, you're just not as bothered by things. You don't, like, you know, it's too cold in here or too hot in here, depending on where you go. I just don't think that's an issue. But I could see how it'd be offensive to live people, particularly your relatives. And so there's a researcher. Her name is Helen Radke. She's a former Mormon. Seems to have some issues with the Mormon church. She lives in Salt Lake City, and she does a lot of research into the things that the Mormon church does. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, apparently. And on Friday, she discovered on a genealogy website restricted to Mormons, someone must have given her a password. The Mormons must do the same thing we do at a Majority Report. Got to become a member by signing up on the site. You just go to majority.fm, sign up to become a member to support the program. And if you want, I will baptize you in the Majority Report faith or the Mormon faith. I'll baptize you in anything you want. I mean, from a distance. Not. I don't want to have to do anything where I actually have to touch you. And some individuals had submitted the name of Nobel Peace Prize winner and Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel as ready for a posthumous proxy baptism. Now, there's a couple of problems with this. One is the dude doesn't want to be baptized as a Mormon. Two, he's not dead. The names of Wiesel's father, who perished in the Holocaust, and his maternal grandfather have also been proposed for proxy baptism. This is according to Radke. She said by Monday, the records had been changed to read to not available. Now, apparently, and I was not aware of this, or maybe I did and I just forgot about it, there was an agreement struck by Mormon elders and some Jewish groups that they would stop doing this. Because apparently it's really annoying. If your parents have died in the Holocaust because they were Jewish, to then have somebody sprinkle Mormon dust on them or whatever they do. I don't know what they do. Now, the Mormons, I think, have a big genealogical database. I'm not 100% clear on that, but I know there's a huge genealogical database in Salt Lake City. And there was a negotiation between Mormon and Jewish leaders in 1995 for the church to stop the baptism, posthumous baptism of all Jews, except in the case of direct ancestors to Mormons. Okay. But it appears that after that, this guy, this woman Radke, found that the church was not adhering to that deal. And so in 2010, they made another deal. Yeah, I don't know if like the Jews had to trade like, you know, like Sandy Koufax to the Mormons in consideration for future Mormons. If you stop baptizing Jews posthumously. But another deal resulted in the promise by Mormon Church to at least prevent inappropriate proxy baptism requests for Holocaust victims, although not all Jews. These Mormons, they drive a hard bargain. The Jews may have you on wholesale, but the Mormons have you when it comes to posthumous baptism, apparently. That's the way it breaks down. And the reason why they carry out the practice of proxy baptisms is, quote, because all who have lived on earth have not had the opportunity to be baptized by proper authority during life on earth. In other words, the Mormons are the proper authorities. They run everything. Baptisms may be performed by proxy, meaning a living person may be baptized in behalf of a deceased person. So in other words, you know, they get another Mormon who's like agreed to be a Mormon, or and you just for the moment pretend you're this dead person who died in the Holocaust, and we're going to baptize you again in the Mormon faith, and then that person will be. Baptisms by the for the dead are performed by church and temples throughout the world. So I guess church officials apologized on Monday for the baptisms, calling them a serious breach of our protocol. This is according to the Salt Lake Tribune. This ain't going to help Mitt Romney. I don't know if it'll hurt him, and I don't know that it should. But apparently there's already some suspicion about the Mormon church. And this doesn't do anything to alleviate that, as far as I can tell. I mean, like I say, you want to baptize me when I'm dead? Go to town. Just don't let my family know about it because they may get uptight about it. And again, no Bieber music. I don't know what happens at the baptisms, but if it's Bieber involved, I'm out. Well, I'll do respect. I've listened to more Bieber than a grown man should at this point in my life. So.
Well, I was reading that Mitt Romney's father-in-law was a hardcore atheist, and after he died, they converted him to a Mormonism. No. So, I mean, imagine the guy, how he must have felt seeing his daughter convert to Mormonism, and then seeing him marry someone who's such a hardcore Mormon like Mitt Romney, and then he dies, and then he's converted to Mormonism himself.
Well, I, like I say, I'm not convinced it sticks. You know what I mean? I mean, you can convert somebody after they're dead, but I'm just not convinced it sticks. I just don't think it holds. All right, let me address this, and then we'll play this. I'm just going to spend a couple of minutes on this. So, as you know, I talked about a member who quit the show, quit supporting the show, because last week Jeff Smith and I were talking about this debate that is taking place online about black bloc tactics in the Occupy movement and the notion of Occupy movement having, you know, being accepting of a diversity of tactics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I didn't think Jeff was advocating violence. I wasn't advocating violence as far as I understand it. But, you know, if a member's offended by what they're hearing on the show, then by all means, don't listen to the show. But this member had said, look, I'm gonna stop supporting the show, but I'll continue to listen to the free version. Now, the interview happened on the free version. So, you know, my feeling is like, you know, if you're offended by the show, then don't listen to the show. Why would you? But the idea that somehow you're disassociating yourself from what you perceive as violent rhetoric or promotion of violence by just listening to the free show just doesn't make any sense to me. So I got this email, and at first, I got to be honest, I thought it was a joke. Dear Sam, I was listening to Thursday's podcast. Aside from the fact that the Occupy movement is all about violence and that you, Sam Cedar, are the number one purveyor of said violence. Okay, let me just stop it there. And I'll read what I responded to this person in email. You need to clarify some points. Well, I said one, the person who canceled, they didn't want to be associated with the show was a man because this person assumed it was a woman. I don't know why that was the case. Number two, I never said that. I got to jump down. I didn't know this. If I grant, for the sake of argument, that a reasonable person could come up with a theory that the Occupy movement is all about violence, I'm just granting that for the sake of argument. I think someone could say to me, all politics are violence. Yeah, okay. I mean, you have an elastic definition of violence, whatever. It's a theory, and, you know, I don't want to argue with that. But in a million years, I don't understand the proposition that I am the number one purveyor of said violence. And I don't understand it in terms of theory or in practice or even in syntax. What does that mean? I'm a giver of that violence? I don't understand what that means. I just don't understand what it means. Then this person goes on to say, I don't understand why you don't totally endorse, quote, the person who is canceling her membership's right to steal from you by listening to the free podcast. I don't think you're stealing anything if you listen to the free podcast. I put it out there for free. I don't even know the dynamic in which you could steal it. You can take it. It's for free. I don't think anybody's stealing anything. He goes on to say, I mean, she is obviously a person of high moral standing with her stand against violence. Yeah, I got no argument with that. So obviously stealing isn't in her nature either, right? This is a person one should emulate. Okay. Therefore, although I only listen to the free podcast, I'm canceling my membership. I realize now what a fool I was to pay for something that is free. I'm under no moral obligation to pay for. Yes, no one is under a moral obligation to pay for this podcast. I was going to say John Benjamin, but that's about it. But that has nothing to do really with the podcast. Rest assured, I will continue to listen to the free podcast, though. Nobody's under a moral obligation to pay for this podcast. I've never said anybody was. I suppose you could say that if someone's listening to the membership part, somehow you got a hold of the membership show, you have a moral or ethical obligation to pay for that because that's, but, you know, I didn't feel that strong. I mean, look, you know, whatever floats your boat. The point is that by becoming a member, you ensure that this show continues. And you, you know, deal with your own morality about it. But I just don't understand people's reaction to this.
You sure that wasn't a joke? I mean.
No, the person, that's what my first response was like, this is pretty funny. And then the person was actually a member. I don't know what to say. If the show offends you, don't listen. If the show doesn't offend you, I hope you make the choice to support it by becoming a member. You're under no moral obligation to do so, and I promise not in any way to convert you to a religion you don't subscribe to, either if you become a member or don't become a member, unless you ask me to, and maybe we can work something out. So with that said, let's go to this was me on the Peter Schiff show today. I wasn't sure I was going to run this, but it was actually pretty good. We were thinking about making it members only, but Matt was like, no, it's too fun. People will enjoy it. Next one we'll make for members only, which is, you know, that's the way, you know, guys like me who like to posthumously convert you. This is what I'm trying to convert you now that you're alive. To a member without, like, you know, you'll actually have to take the final step. Okay. So here is the interview. Now, the interesting thing about this is that Peter Schiff is arguing from a libertarian perspective. Now, I think philosophically you could argue that this is another government mandate and our freedom is inhibited in some way, but he doesn't, you could argue that I don't see it. But what he takes this argument into a place that essentially is a data argument. And unfortunately for Peter, he does not have the data. He's incorrect. And I will go into this more deeply in the post show, exactly what the data says. But you should know, listen, remember, it's a radio interview. So going into the weeds is not necessarily in the best interest of anybody, but apparently talking over each other is, which, you know, it's radio. Okay, here it is.
We now return to the Peter Schiff Show. Call in now, 855-4-SCHIFF. That's 855-472-4433. Radio, the Peter Schiff Show.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Peter Schiff here at SchiffRadio.com. Joining the show right now is Sam Sater, who is a comedian, writer, actor, talk radio host, film director, TV producer. Been wearing a lot of hats. He's also an occasional guest host on Countdown with Keith Olbermann. He's the co-host of the nationally syndicated progressive radio interview program, Ring of Fire. He co-hosted by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Florida-based attorney Mike Pampitonio. He's also co-hosted along with Janine Garofalo on-air American Radio's The Majority Report. Needless to say, we're probably going to have a bit of a debate here. Sam, welcome to the Peter Schiff Show.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Boy, I'll tell you, I'm exhausted just by how much stuff I do.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you had some time to come on the show. So I think you came on in large part to talk about the Obama, I guess, compromise now with respect to the mandate that Catholic churches be required to provide their employees or their female employees with free birth control. I mean, what do you think of the president's position on this issue?
Well, I don't think you characterized his original mandate quite correctly. He didn't say that Catholic churches have to provide their employees. All religious institutions like that are completely exempt, as they've always been. What he said was that if there are institutions that are run, that are not primarily in the business of providing religious services, in other words, like a hospital or a school, in those instances, if the institution offers prescription drug care, they can't, they cannot deny contraceptive or, frankly, any other drugs based on their own whim. If they offer prescription drugs, they've got to offer that one. And I think the compromise. I'm sorry. The compromise was essentially that the churches or the institutions no longer have to pay for that. That's a deal basically the administration has struck with insurance companies, where the insurance companies will simply provide it so that it won't offend the sensibilities, I guess, of any of the employers.
But, of course, the insurance companies are going to have to get the money by charging those institutions more money for the people who do have coverage, because they're not going to provide it for free. So the churches will ultimately be paying for
Actually,
it.
Actually, no.
Not
as part of the
directly.
Affordable Care Act, the president, the deal, and the insurance companies will not be passing on those costs. In many instances, frankly, a lot of those insurance companies
will
save.
How can they prevent them from doing it? I mean, how can they prevent them from passing on the costs? I don't understand how that's possible.
Well, I think under the Affordable Care Act, that's part of the deal. You know, the insurance companies got a big benefit out of this. They're going to get a lot of new customers. And in many instances, the insurance companies end up saving money because it prevents, you know, as you know, there are millions upon millions of women who take birth control, not necessarily as contraceptives, but because it deals with other medical issues that they have.
Argument is not going to fly with me. You see, if insurance companies believed that they would save money by providing the free birth control, the government wouldn't have to require it. They would do it on their own. The fact that they're not doing it and that the government has to force them to do it means it doesn't save them money. It's going to increase the cost of providing health insurance, and it's just going to make health insurance.
Well, I think the problem in the past, the problem in the past is the insurance companies, when they're dealing with an institution has problems with contraception, even though it may be in their best interest to do it, the institutions won't buy that insurance, and so they don't offer it. I mean, so this isn't a situation where necessarily, you know, the insurance companies have an option. They can either save themselves a little money by offering free contraception, or they can get the contract with this institution, and now they don't have to make that choice.
I don't think, you know, I think that the insurance companies, if it saves them money, they would do it.
I'm going to offer you a product that is in my best interest, but you have a moral problem with it, you're not going to buy that product, then I'm going to say, okay, fine. I'm not going to get those savings on offering free birth control, but I still get your contract. So, you know, they're still working in their best interest there.
I would argue that there is not going to be a savings. This is going to increase the cost. And, you know, I think there's a bigger issue here. I understand this issue between separation and church or state, and I don't want to minimize it, but I think it's masking a bigger issue. I don't believe that there is any constitutional authority for the government to mandate anybody provide anything for free, let alone birth control. Why do I have to provide my? I have a small company, Euro Pacific Capital. I have over 100 employees. A number of them are women. How can the government tell me that I have to offer insurance to my employees that gives women free contraception? What's the justification or the authorization for the federal government to do that?
Well, it's the authorization comes from the Civil Rights Act. If you offer prescription care, you can choose not to offer any prescription drugs, and in which case you got no problem. But if you're offering prescription drugs and you're specifically denying a class of people who work for you a drug that would be helpful to them, then you've got a problem based on the Civil Rights Act.
First of all, you got two problems there. First of all, number one, the prescription drug plan that I have now there's copays. I mean, you don't get the drugs for free. You just get the drugs at a reduced price. This is saying that you have to provide birth control for free. No, so that's different than all the other stuff that I provide. And of course, this is not about civil rights. If a woman wants free birth control and I don't offer it, she can take a job at a company that does offer it. You know, if that's what's important to her.
Well, although, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there are 25 million people.
Birth control is a lot cheaper when you buy it than when you get it for free from the government.
I don't subscribe to this notion that people can just simply walk away from their jobs and easily find another one. I'm not sure, what's happening over in the world that you live in. But in the world that I live in, people are very fortunate to have jobs. Now, listen, I at the end of the day, I would much rather see a Medicare buy-in for all people or a government-sponsored insurance program, because I think this is one of the big problems, is that people's freedom is completely curtailed by the fact that if I need health care, I don't have the option to go and pursue a job that I necessarily like better or offer me better situation because
I
need that
health care. Let me throw this out at you. What if I have a female employee, and right now she doesn't get any birth control from me, but she spends $500 a year on her contraception? I'm just making up a number. It probably isn't that much. But let's say she spends $500 a year.
Oh, it's definitely $500. It's definitely it's
all right, but
over $500.
Let me finish my point.
Okay.
All right, so let's say she's spending $500 a year, and now
well,
I
let's
provide
say 900,
her for free. Let's just say it's $500. It doesn't matter. So let's say she's spending $500, and I decide that now she's going to get it for free, but because my health insurance premiums now go up, I reduce her pay by $1,000 a year. So now she's earning $1,000 a year less, but she's getting her free birth control. She's worse off because she's getting free birth control, because I had to reduce her pay by a lot more than what she used to pay for birth control.
Well, first of all, Peter, I think the preponderance of the evidence is that actually your premiums are not going to go up. And
wouldn't they?
Well, because listen, I got news for you. If I have a car, let's put it just in terms of a car. I can either pay for my oil change or I cannot change my oil, and I'm going to have much bigger problems down the road. I mean, that's what.
Auto insurance.
I'm not talking about insurance. I'm simply talking about the idea of maintenance. Of maintenance, preventative care saves money for insurance companies down the road. Any actuarial will tell you.
Hold on, you're missing the point. Sam, there isn't an auto insurance company in existence that covers an oil change. Right? So,
if what you're saying is true, why aren't the insurance companies giving free oil changes
with their premiums?
Well, let me put it this way: if you get regular checkups, you're going to save an insurance company money, because down the road, every insurance company will tell you that preventative care is better than waiting for a problem to get worse.
Then answer my question: why don't insurance policies come with free oil changes?
Why don't in car insurance?
What? Yes.
Well,
if
car insurance is going to cover
it for free.
Right, but in fact, health insurance companies do encourage wellness programs. They do institute this.
Yes,
they do give you
for,
free. And they do.
But if they're not doing it now and the government is forcing them to do something, it's because it doesn't lower their costs. First of all, you know.
No, but Peter, we've gone through this. The reason why insurance companies.
Birth control is birth control. It's not health insurance.
Peter, I answered that. The reason why insurance companies do not offer free contraceptive care to clients that are run by religious institutions is because those religious institutions would go and seek out a different insurance company because they don't want to have their moral sensibilities
tainted. Forget about the religious institutions. My employees right now don't get free birth control. And I'm not a religious institution. So Obama is saying that I now have to provide my female employees with free birth control. I'm not doing it now. But they're saying you have to do it. So where is the money going to come from to do that? I've got to cut the salary of my workers, my female workers, so that I can afford it.
Well, I mean, listen, if you cut the salaries for your female workers, they're in the same situation at that point as they would have been otherwise, I guess, is your argument.
And but, you know what?
But at the end of the day, it costs, listen, by the time you give them $1,000, Peter,
I've
no, let me finish my point. Let me address it. By the time you give them $1,000,
I'm going to have to cut their pay.
By the time you give them $1,000.
I'm going to have to pay for their birth control, even though they don't use it.
By the time.
Anyway, we'll be back. We'll continue this discussion. You're listening to the Peter Schiff Show here at SchiffRadio.com.
To President Obama, Secretary Geithner, Madam Pelosi, and all of the socialist econ professors across America, we're sorry.
We're sorry.
Peter Schiff is back on the air.
This is Peter Schiff. I'm back on with Sam Sater here talking about free birth control. Of course, there is no such thing as a free lunch or free birth control, and there is nothing that is as expensive as what the government provides for free. Hey, Sam, I want to ask you a question. Would you concede that right now there are some women who are, when they're evaluating which method of birth control to use, let's say there's a woman who's not very sexually active. She looks at the birth control pill, sees, well, you know, that's kind of expensive. I don't have a lot of sex. So she decides to maybe have a diaphragm or use condoms. Would you say that that's probably a decision that a lot of women make, and they opt for a less expensive form of birth control because they don't think they need the more expensive kind?
I suppose it's possible. I mean, I haven't seen the data on it. What I have seen is that 2000, the study by the National Business Group on Health, which estimates that not providing contraceptive coverage in employee health plans ends up costing employers 15 to 17% more than providing such coverage because of the health benefits, because of complications.
Well, then employers will provide it. Sam, if that's the case, employers will provide it on their own.
Well, listen, Peter, just like you didn't even – Peter, just like you didn't know – hold on for a second. Just like you didn't know about that study, employers don't always have all the facts. We don't live in a perfect world where everyone has the most information.
Don't force them to do something. Let the government put out the facts and let businesses make a decision. But anyway, here's my point. If birth control is free, right, if it's free, then cost is no longer an issue, right? A woman will choose whichever kind she wants. She won't care what it costs, correct?
I believe so, sure. I mean, it's a function of you know, there's other health decisions. I mean, it's, you know, when you go on the contraceptive pill, there's other implications.
Right, but the government, by making birth control free, price is no longer a concern. Therefore, what's going to happen is a lot of women who are now using condoms will decide that they're just going to go on the pill. And so a lot more people are going to use the pill. The cost of birth control is going to go up in this country. And, of course, the manufacturers of the pill or other methods are now going to have no resistance to raising their prices. Hey, it doesn't matter. We can jack our prices up through the roof. We're not going to lose a single customer because nobody is paying for it. Well, so what we're going to do is make birth control a lot more expensive and therefore health insurance a lot more costly.
No, I don't think so, Peter. I mean, in the case of the contraceptive pill, there's a lot more competition in the marketplace. You've seen the end of market exclusivity and patents on that, which would prevent copycat.
But that competition is going to go away when it comes to – hold on.
No, let me finish. There isn't just one birth control maker in this country, Peter. Listen, there's no – listen,
Sam,
Peter,
let me make this
your
point.
Entire argument is premised
when women are shopping
on facts
based on price.
That are not
they are
supported
no longer
going to
compete on price.
Peter,
they will compete
Peter,
on
your
other things.
Entire
like, hey, this birth control pill really helps your complexion. So
on
take this.
Facts that
price
are not
is
supported
no
by the data.
I
don't
price
know what to tell you.
No object.
I didn't
so
do these studies.
Go through the roof.
I didn't do these studies. The reason why this is in any way a controversy has nothing to do with cost. It has to do with the fact that there were religious institutions that didn't want to provide birth control because of their moral
reasons. I don't care
reason.
About the religious and, part
exactly.
of it.
Exactly. Well, everything else is settled because we've seen the data. The data
no,
is out
settled.
There. It saves money
no, if,
to provide
if,
this preventative care. That's the bottom
but
line.
If it was,
that's why.
If it was
that's
in
why
the insurance
this is
company's interest. If it really reduced costs, they would provide it anyway.
In many instances, they do. And
gonna,
the fact of the matter is that if
then,
if you've got drug
it,
companies,
then let them do it.
Well,
but
then,
I don't do it, Sam. This is what's going to happen, and I will make a bet with you if you want to bet me money. I will bet if this thing goes through, a few years from now, we will see Hold on. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. We're going to see more unwanted pregnancies because people are going to be irresponsible with the pill, because the people who don't have birth control now, it's not because they can't afford it. It's because they're probably too irresponsible to buy it. But we're going to have more we're going to have more unwanted pregnancies. We're going to have more – hold on. We're going to have more STDs because fewer people will use condoms. And we're going to see a huge increase in the cost of all contraception and all insurance. That's what's going to happen.
Well, I think we're going to see a huge increase in the cost of insurance because just we have runaway medical costs in this country. But as to everything else you're saying, there's absolutely no data to support what you're saying. So, I mean, it may sound
intuitive to
you, and you weren't even aware of these studies that show that it actually decreases costs for employers. It decreases costs for insurers.
And you're talking about providing it for free, no copay, no deductible, absolutely free?
Exactly.
So you get all the birth control you want. It costs you nothing.
People can look it up. It's the study by the National Business Group on Health. It was out in 2000. I think there was a report out by the Guttmacher Institute that came out I think it was last year, that showed the same thing. I mean, look, we do have problems with healthcare. I'll agree with you that we have a patent system and a market exclusivity for these corporations that make pharmaceutical products that benefits these companies, and I would love to see a rollback of that. I think there are other ways in which
What we need is a rollback of the FDA. That's what makes it so expensive to develop these products. It's the FDA that drives up the cost. And you're right. We have runaway healthcare costs because the government has taken competition out of healthcare, just like they're taking it now out of birth control. The biggest winners from this bill are the manufacturers of birth control devices. That's who's going to make a fortune, because now there's going to be
huge
demand.
Well, I would also argue that big winners out of this are also women who are faced with, you know, closer to $900 to $1,000 a year of cost. We're going to see health improvements with these women, and we're going to see.
But they're not going to get that for free. They're not going to get birth control for free. The women are going to pay for it. It's going to cost women even more for birth control when it's free, because women's wages are going to be decline by a lot more than the value of that birth control. Mark my words. There is nothing for free.
Well, then women, I think that then as an employer, if you start to pay your women less, you're going to have a problem with the EEOC because that's not
legal.
That's
what's going to happen. And you know what's also going to happen? Some young women are going to find it harder to get jobs because employers are going to say, well, gee, if I hire this woman, I got to give her free birth control. So if it's a low salary, I'll just hire
Peter,
the guy.
I'll tell you what. I mean, if you can show me data of that in 5 years, if you can show me data that young women are having a tougher time finding jobs because of this birth control measure, that is actually something that, despite the fact that we have obviously different capacity to sustain a bet, that's something I would bet you money on.
All right. Well, you know, do you employ anybody right now, Sam?
I do.
All right. Well, when you hire people, is cost an issue? Do you look at what you pay them, or do you evaluate what you'd have to pay them?
It's one element. Yes, their skill set. What they bring to what I'm doing. There's a lot of different things.
So
yes.
if the government makes it more expensive to hire women, if women come with a higher price tag than men, then
30 seconds.
Are going to hire fewer women relative to men.
Yes, and if there was data to support that assertion, Peter, then you might have an argument. But there is no data to assert to make that assertion. You don't. The numbers simply don't agree with you, Peter.
It's basic econ. It's supply and demand.
I understand, but the numbers don't agree that it's going to cost employers more.
If it's less expensive, I'll buy more. If it's free,
the data's just not there, Peter. You can't make up numbers.
I don't even need. Anyway, we'll be right back. Thanks for coming on the show. We got
Thanks
another hour
me.
Of the Peter Schick Show coming up, so stick around.
All right. So let me clarify a couple of things. I am no longer on Air America, and the show is not co-hosted with Janine Garofalo. And you pronounce my name Cedar. But, you know, when I go on radio, you say Seder, it doesn't bother me because more people are likely to find the show that way. The Guttmacher Institute in 2011 shows that if you give free birth control to women, the insurance premiums per individual on that plan across the board will rise anywhere from $37 to $41 a year. That is in relationship to a $5,000 to $14,000 premium. However, that does not factor in the fact of how much savings down the road both insurance companies and, frankly, all of us will save from preventing unwanted pregnancies, from all the other health issues that people take contraception for, the contraceptive pill for. So you have couples using no method of contraception run a 85% chance of unintended pregnancy within 12 months. Insurers that waive copays also avoid shelling out for complications that are often accompany unplanned pregnancies, including high-risk situations as birth of success in children that aren't properly spaced out, a woman doesn't know that she's pregnant and drinks during those first crucial months, preteen girls having children. Contraception does not cost insurers nearly as much as people assume. Only 28% of women use the most expensive form of birth control, the pill. Will that go up? Likely. But 37% of couples choose tubal sterilization or vasectomy. That won't change. And so we know that the savings are going to be much higher down the road. Like I said, the 2000 study by the National Business Group on Health, it winds up costing employers 15 to 17% more than providing this free contraceptive coverage. Because Peter Schiff's premiums will go up. Now, here's the problem. Peter doesn't spend his day going over the actuarial tables. So Peter Schiff does not realize that by not providing contraceptive care for his employers, that his premiums that he will pay for his employers goes up because one of them, or two of them, or five of them, I don't know the numbers, it's in the study, will have complications that will arise. Maybe he's hurt in productivity because one has an unplanned pregnancy. Maybe there's other complications that happen because they don't get it. Peter's not aware of this because he has a business to run. But he refuses to look at the data because it doesn't fit into his paradigm. And that is not to mention the cost that is borne by other people outside of, you know, woman gets pregnant, loses her job, happens to switch her job, has no insurance. We end up paying for it through Medicaid. I mean, this is going to save society money. It's going to save employers money, and it's going to save insurers money. The data is there. He has no data to cite anything. The idea that insurance companies haven't jumped on this is the functional equivalent of people saying in New York in 1996 or whenever it was, what was it, 2003, when they banned trans fats in restaurants. Do you remember when they did this? And everybody was saying, this is going to destroy the restaurant business in New York. It's going to destroy it. Well, years later, no, in fact, it hasn't impacted the restaurant business at all. But what we do know is that the through surveys and tests of blood reports, that the level of trans fats, plastic, artificial trans fats in Americans' bloodstream is at half of what it was 10 years ago. There have been significant health benefits and i.e. cost benefits to society. And despite the fact that all these restaurants were going to close up because they can't use plastic in their cooking, it didn't happen. You do not have to travel very far for industries to assume that certain things are going to destroy their industry and find out it doesn't. That's just human nature. People don't like change. And what also appears to be human nature is they ignore data because it doesn't fit in with their libertarian ideology. Because to a certain extent, I think Peter was being disingenuous. Because if this really was about cost for a libertarian, they would have gone and dug up the data. He would have been able to say, no, Sam, you're wrong. I've seen the 2000 study by the National Business Group on Health, but you're not aware of the 2003 study by the blah, 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 blah. No, libertarians philosophically do not like government intervention unless it's just sort of like the receded government intervention that sets up things like corporations. Or the ones that protect their property through government violence. I mean, that's the problem with libertarianism, is that they just want the status quo, because more often than not, it benefits a certain group of people that they perceive really are deserving of that benefit. Remember, like, you know, these people, you know, at one point he's saying, people are going to start buying the pill more because it's going to be free. But in the next breath, he says, these people are so irresponsible, they probably won't even take the pill. That statement, that 10-second clip of that entire exchange is the most illustrative of really what is behind libertarianism. F the suckers. F the weak. F the stupid. F the less fortunate. But guess what, folks? Even if these people are stupid, even if these people are irresponsible, they live in society with us, and we cannot deny their existence. And we can either have society function to absorb the stupidity, or we can just simply pay for it in many other ways. We cannot build that barge in the ocean and bring all the stupid people there and rid ourselves of all the weak and the infirm in our society. They're here. They're not going anywhere. And we can either address it, or we can pay the consequences. We will talk to Jeff Smith tomorrow, because I want to make sure that he gets in. And we've gone over. If you can become a member of this program, it is your moral obligation to do so. And if you don't, I will convert you to a religion of my choice. And then I will force you to take birth control pills, which for a lot of women is probably unhealthy, and for men it can't be healthy, because I think it involves a lot of like hormones. It's just, so I will do all of that to you, and then I will of course purvey violence. Maybe I'll roll that all into one thing where I convert you by purveying violence on you and forcing you to take birth control pills. Don't make me do that.
There's a number of times I've had to stop Sam from throwing Molotov cocktails in the office.
Yes, but a special combination of like birth control Molotov cocktails. Molotov cocktail is actually a... What? You've got to be kidding me. All right, we got another email in the that I got to read, I guess, in the post show. We will talk to Jeff Smith from Occupy Wall Street on this diversity of tactics issue tomorrow. See you in the better half of the program. You want to call me, 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. I know there's some libertarian out there who wants me to hand me my buttocks on a platter. So please, call in, feel free. We'll be right back after this.